At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the World Messenger, and I'm inviting you for another episode of Legacy Leadership. Today, I have a very special guest joining me from Louisiana, and he's doing some tremendous work, and I will let him explain how he is managing to do some not only consulting in technical aspects of the global data systems and cybersecurity operations, how he's being part of the in Louisiana in such a meaningful way. We're creating tremendous impact in different roles, from Cloud Security Alliance to Louisiana chapter of InfraGuard and much more. But I also wanted to point it out, he is a former veteran. He served in Air Force and he transitioned so well from military to corporate arena. And right now it's giving back and creating phenomenal community. Without further ado, I would love to introduce you to today's guest, Joshua Jaten Tanel. Hey, Jaten, how are you?
Isabella, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for that awesome introduction. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. I'm just have to say very puzzled how many things you've been or are currently involved in. So before we go into all these associations, you're obviously taking everything to next level, and it's wonderful for Louisiana to have you because we know that they had not only some interesting things in breaches in 2019 and vulnerability that is associated with everything and implication that affects and creates sometimes that negative ripple effect. But I really want to backpedal. You are being raised where? Where you've been raised and born?
I'm originally from Monroe, Louisiana, which is the northeast part of the state. Currently, I live in southwest Louisiana in a town called Lake Charles, and everybody makes fun of me because in Monroe, we're considered Yankee Louisianians. And in the south, and down here in South Louisiana, we're considered Cajuns. So mm-hmm. That's where I'm currently living, but I like to help the state of Louisiana. So I travel all across the state when I can.
That's fantastic. And thank you for that distinction. When you mentioned Cajun, I'm thinking all Cajun food and all
mm-hmm. the yes, girl. Spices.
So I'm like, cannot wait to try some of that again.
Yeah, come on down and visit.
Absolutely, I will. And state of Louisiana, it's been going through so much, not only obviously with cybersecurity and safety, but also obviously with the floods, with so many things that really hit different parts of the state and created this tremendous vulnerability for their population. So it's wonderful to meet someone who is originally from that region and continues to give back. So it's even more meaningful. But as you grew up there, you also decided to go to military. I'm curious, how did you make that decision and why did you want to go
yes.
to military?
So funny story. So I grew up in a broken home and my mom and dad got divorced and I went to live with my great uncle and my great aunt. So it was my grandfather's little brother and my grandfather's sister-in-law. And it was the summer before my senior year of high school. And I was sitting on the recliner watching MTV, drinking Mountain Dew from a 2-liter. And my uncle, my great uncle, comes home from work and he's a prior Army and Air Force veteran himself. And he comes home and he's tough love. He's a tough love kind of guy. And he's like, Josh, we need to talk. I'm like, okay, what's up, Uncle Johnny? He said, well, what are you going to do when you graduate high school? Now, mind you, senior year of high school hasn't even begun yet. I have no worry in the world. I'm thinking about sports and girls. That's all like my little 17-year-old brain cared about. I hadn't put any thought into what I'm going to do after high school. So I said, Uncle Johnny, I don't know what I'm going to do when I graduate high school. What do you recommend? He said, well, you're not smart enough for an academic scholarship to college. You're not athletic enough for an athletic scholarship to college. Your family has no money to send you to college. I'm not sending you to college. And you can't live here. So what are you going to do? I
Ooh.
was like, well, dang, Uncle Johnny, with those types of options, what do you recommend? He said, I recommend you join the Air Force. I said, okay, I'm sold. So he sold it to me. And the very next day, we went to the recruiter and signed up. And that's why I joined the Air Force.
But that's hilarious, and it also, in a way, really pointed, obviously pivotal, a point in your life, when a lot of times we don't know what options are. Luckily, you had someone to give you the reality check.
Yes.
But you mentioned something that caught my ear. You said you listened to MTV. I grew up on MTV, but as a European transplant, so I have to ask you, what was some of your favorite music that you listened? Because obviously, being European transplant, I was so indoctrinated in European music and everything else. How about you?
I really like the 80s hair band type music that, but by the time I was in high school, I really wasn't watching MTV for the music. I was watching it for their beach bikini shows. Yeah. I was
Videos.
watching it for that reason, not really the music.
Wow, at least the truth comes out now. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to say, the videos that are used to be made and technology that they were had at that time and how amazing they were, it's priceless, right? So which also shows evolution of technology, what we have so much and available, but it's just so many things are so different. Wouldn't you say
Yeah.
that?
Oh, absolutely. Techno, and that's, transitioning to cybersecurity. That's actually a great segue to not only why I joined the Air Force, but specifically why did I choose an IT career? And it's because some reason, and I give it divine intervention, I give the credit to God. I think God put it on my heart that the world was going to be driven by technology, and technology was going to be more in demand than ever. And back then, Windows 95 operating system hadn't even really been popular, the home computers. But I, for some reason, envisioned that I didn't want to join the military for a career. I wanted to do 4 years and get out. And so I wanted a career, I wanted a trade or a skill that I could serve, that I could do outside of the military without being dependent on the military. For example, if I was joining the army, I wouldn't want to be a tank mechanic or an infantryman because those job skills are really heavily dependent on war and fighting. I wanted a skill that could give me transition to the civilian life easily. So I purposely picked IT. And another reason I picked IT as a skill for the Air Force to teach me was because in the early 90s, all I knew about the military was what I saw on TV with Operation Desert Storm when US invaded Iraq. And you saw the desert and the sand and the heat, and you saw all the army soldiers out in the heat and getting shot. I was like, I don't want that military life. Give me a military life with computers and air conditioning. And guess what? 9 years after I joined, the Air Force sent me to Baghdad, Iraq, and I was in the desert, but I was in the US Embassy in Baghdad, Iraq, because I chose IT as a career.
Wow. That is definitely outstanding outcome. But also, thank you, first of all, for your service
My
and
pleasure.
working with so many military guys in the past through my other endeavors. I know that that situation was definitely not a piece of cake, even though it was in the embassy, because things were very
Yeah,
volatile
I was
and
actually in the US Embassy. Whenever, so we were heavily targeted every night by bombs and mortars and rocket propelled grenades, and they actually hit. So I was in Iraq in 2004, October 2004 to February 2005 for the very first ever Iraq national elections. And before the election in that country, the US Embassy was heavily targeted, and they actually had a connection where the a hit, a direct hit on the US Embassy. And three US Americans died at the US Embassy while I was there. So very, very surreal, very sad. I'm very lucky that not only did I come home in one piece, not everybody did, but I also don't suffer from PTSD, which a lot of people do. So I'm very thankful that I'm okay. I am not a disabled vet. I'm just a veteran, and I'm thankful for that.
That is fantastic because, as you said, that is not the case for a lot of people.
Correct.
And even decades later or more, people come and get unexpected flashbacks and issues seen. And as a result, fortunately, we see not only that people cannot function very well, but also suicides on the rise as a result of it because
yes, it's very sad.
There with implications that happened in the war zones. So fast forward after obviously getting back, I'm curious, this is what I wanted to for everybody watching and listening. One fact is the technology touches absolutely everything we do as individual users or as we deal in any business, right? Every business is depending on technology. So when we talk about it, how important that is and how specific divisions and forms and different evolutions of the technology and how we much need to grow with that, it's obviously very clear why we need to have it. But I want to also highlight cyber security and just security in general. Mm-hmm. Do you mind shedding some light? Why is this so important? Because I hear so many people, I'm not technical, or I'm not dealing in this department, or this is just what we focus. How much people limit to really fully understand why is we need to, even though we don't necessarily touch that, which we actually do, to really have a different mindset around it?
Yeah, a great question. And I have a lot of strong opinions about that topic. The Air Force taught me cybersecurity. I do cybersecurity for my current company, Global Data Systems. And what I tell people who don't quite get it, some small businesses are like, you know, they're not going to target me. Why do I care? Even residential, you know, home users don't understand the vulnerabilities they have and the risks they have to their credit, you know, or identity theft. And so what I tell people, especially on the business side, is the reason cybersecurity is so important is because it's the cost of doing business now on the business side. If you think about all these ransomware attacks, they're happening. It's documented evidence of it. It's not a figment of anybody's, but this is a real thing. And so ransomware is to cybersecurity and cost of doing business like the AIDS epidemic was to PPE, personal protective equipment, to the dentist office and healthcare, like COVID. When COVID hit, all of a sudden businesses had to spend more on masks and gloves and PPE. When AIDS hit in the 80s, businesses had to spend more on masks and gloves and personal protective equipment. And ransomware and computer fraud is the same thing to our IT departments as those pandemics were to our healthcare sector. It's going to happen. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And so you've got to be prepared. And so IT is a business enabler. If you're going to have a business dependent on technology like IT for productivity and to do fast, then you're dependent on that technology. You got to ensure it. You got to protect it. You got to safeguard it because you will be hit and that could put you out of business. And then on the residential side, what I tell to the average human who's in HR or they're in payroll or they're not an IT techie nerd geek person, the Air Force taught me this and it made sense. The Air Force teaches all airmen that computer system is to be treated the same as a weapon system, because now the digital, the war field, the battlefield is now a digital battlefield. It's not just kinetic missiles and bombs. Now the battlefield is that digital frontier. And so these IT systems, these laptops, these smartphones that Russia, China can hack into, those are weapon systems. And so you have to treat them as such. And you got to be mindful of your usage. And you can't leave your weapon system unattended where the adversary can come get it. And so when you tell the average person, hey, your computer is a weapon system, and you give them that analogy to the military, that kind of helps open their eyes. So did I cover the question?
Yes, you did. And thank you so much for pointing this out, because now when we have a shared understanding, every single individual touches technology, and as a result, whatever safeguards are in the place or not, and lack of knowledge or understanding puts everybody at risk. And as a result, we see these constant breaches because we make easy not only for issues to occur, and then we see on flip side tremendous liabilities and fines, and as a result, actually many companies going under. And most recent few that we experienced, not only with our social security numbers or with other types of protected data, there are truly implications that we don't even know yet, right? It's like the level of risk and the level of problem and years to come, it's going to be really hard to assess or immediately implications of it. So with that in mind, could you please tell us, obviously, what you've seen, what happened, the breach in 2019 in Louisiana, and what actions do you took to prevent from future occurrences and position not only the state, but also certain cities through your tremendous efforts and all these associations you're part of?
Yeah. So there's a funny story about that. So one thing that I did to transition from military into the civilian workforce was I did 9 years active duty Air Force, and then I transitioned into the National Guard. And when you're in the National Guard, you're part-time military. So 1 weekend a month, you do your military service. And then during the week, you work in your regular day job. It so happened my regular day job while I was in the Louisiana Air National Guard was I was a cybersecurity incident response, person for CenturyLink. Which is now Lumen, a Fortune 200 technology company. And so my day job, I got to do cyber incident response for a major telco. And then I would bring that experience to the National Guard 1 week in a month. And we helped back in like 2017 or so, we stood up state of Louisiana's very first ever Louisiana National Guard, Army and Air National Guard joint cyber defense incident response team. And we would take these airmen and these soldiers from the National Guard, and we would join about 3-4 times a year, and we would practice cybersecurity incident response in case the state of Louisiana got hit. And we did this month after month, year after year, for a couple years. And then in July 2019, you guys can Google this, July of 2019, Louisiana got hit with a major statewide ransomware attack, and it took down a lot of our Louisiana government systems. It took down some of our school boards across the whole state, not just in Baton Rouge, but across the state of Louisiana. We had schools that were about to start that the children wouldn't be able to go to school. We had our driver's license, the DMV, the Office of Motor Vehicles, that state system went down. Other state systems went down because this major cyber attack that hit and impacted our entire state. And it happened right when I retired from the National Guard cyber incident response team. So I was so disappointed. I'm like, really? I've been practicing and training to help respond to this statewide event, and it finally happens, but I'm out. But luckily, the general in charge of the National Guard called upon Lumen, back then it was called CenturyLink, and asked if they had any civilian resources that could come help with the response to recover all of our state resources. And because I was in the National Guard previously, my name bubbled to the top, and I got to go help restore this as a civilian. So that's my funny story. About how, man, I practiced and trained, and then it happened right when I got retired after 21 years of service. But then to answer the other second part of your question is, what has Louisiana done since then? What did we learn? You know, in the industry, we say never let a good incident go to waste. So we had a major statewide incident. What have we done since then? Well, I got to tip my hat to Governor Edwards at the time. He immediately saw this weakness, and he spent money to build up our statewide cyber incident response resources through something called GOSEP. It's the Governor's Office of Homeland Security. EP is the emergency protection. And so he really funded up his GOSEP team. And we actually took recently President Biden's infrastructure plan. We took some of that infrastructure money, and the state of Louisiana's GOSEP team had a strategy. Either we can divide this money into 64, because there's 64 parishes in Louisiana. That's one unique thing about Louisiana. We don't have counties, we have parishes. We have 64 parishes. And so Baton Rouge GOSEP leaders were like, we can divide the money into 64 and give it to the parishes to bolster their cybersecurity defenses, Or what they did, which I think is a great plan, the Louisiana government took that money from the infrastructure bill and they bolstered their cybersecurity posture in a centralized manner, managed by GOSEP, and they allow any municipality or government agency in Louisiana to take advantage of these mitigation techniques, these cybersecurity tools, software, processes. So basically, now GOSEP is kind of like your managed security service provider for like our sheriff's departments in our cities and our states. And they've got top of the line cybersecurity software products and technology to help make Louisiana a more hardened target. So that's the long-winded answer. I'm sorry. I'm just so passionate. I love talking this stuff with you.
Well, excellent. And I'm glad you're sharing all of that and connecting the dots, because this is a perfect example why this has to be priority, right? It's not like I never grew up in that mindset of around the technology, obviously, when being introduced over the years, but I realized that everything we do in the business, and no matter what side of the business, is like this is such a fundamental part of infrastructure, part of how we operate, how we do day to day. And we cannot ignore it. And then over the years, as a result, I'm looking at where the vulnerability, where the risks are, how can we also make changes to prevent that, and looking patterns from behavioral standpoint, right? It's like we cannot ignore this. But what I wanted for everybody, again, watching and listening, to really understand, imagine the whole state going down. Imagine all the heavy infrastructure being at halt, how much that affects day to day, how much affects everything that is going on in that state. And or
There
if that
was
happens and affects now the whole country, right? Because that's now ripple effect. How is it impacting the neighboring states, and how is it impacting the companies and everybody else? So I love
Yes.
that you stepped in and you start building phenomenal community. And as a result, also being involved and built some really great associations and look things from multiple different perspectives. Do you mind sharing? So for other states that can really look at what you're doing so well and opportunities for them to expand upon.
From the community building part, is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah, so the community building, how that started was, so back in 2014, I got hired on by CenturyLink at our headquarters in Monroe, and my boss, Bill Swearingen, was out of our Kansas City office. And in Kansas City, they have a cybersecurity community that they built there, and they have a monthly meetup, and they have, it's almost like a small mini cybersecurity conference, like Black Hat or DEF CON, but they do it monthly. And I was so jealous. Because they had this cool, they had drinks, they had sponsors, they were talking cybersecurity, and they did it every month in Kansas City called SEC KC, SEC, and then KC. And they kept bragging about, oh, we had a cool SEC KC event last night. And they kept bragging. I was like, I want that. But Monroe, a tiny town of 60,000 people, we just don't have the IT and cybersecurity community like they do. And so we didn't have anything like that. So I found a need and I filled it. So I started it. And my advice to people who I live in a small town, no one's going to do this. My advice is don't be deterred. Start small. If you can get just two other people, if you can get two other people within a 30-mile radius of you that want to start this, I called it basically the same as a book club. We're starting a book club. Instead of talking about books we read, we're going to talk about cybersecurity stuff we read. And we come together and you just be consistent. So that's my other advice is be consistent. Meet the same month, I mean the same day of the week, at the same time, at the same location. Get that consistency going and then try to market the heck out of it on social media and try to spread the word. And then it grows from there. So I started the one in Monroe back in 2014. And I'm proud to say thanks to my friend Diane. Tabby, she kept it going. We kept it going for many years. It's still going today. That was 10 years ago in a town the size of Monroe, Louisiana. But then when I moved out of Monroe to Lake Charles in 2017, Lake Charles didn't have a community, a cybersecurity IT community. So I did the same thing. I started. I got three people. We all agreed we wanted to meet up, have drinks, and talk technology. And we've been meeting the same, you know, the last Wednesday of every month for like 4 years now. And then I had so many people in the industry were like, JTN, I love what you're doing in Monroe. I love what you're doing in Lake Charles. Can you start one in Lafayette? Can you start one in Baton Rouge? And my answer is no, not by myself, but I'll help you start it. And so I would help them start the one in the different city, and I would kick it off and get everything going. And then I had a strong leader pick it up and run it from there. And so, but I will say one differentiator that I had that the average person doesn't have, and I need to give credit to this. It's not as easy as I make it sound. One of the things that made it easy for me was because of my role with CenturyLink at the time. I had vendors from all across the country constantly pinging me, hitting me up on LinkedIn, wanting to get pitch me a sales demo. And so I would listen to that sales demo, and I would honestly consider if that's something I wanted to, push up the chain of command or not. But I would always end the conversation with, "Hey, I love your product. I don't know if we can buy it or not, but I have an opportunity for you to get your product in front of a larger audience. Would you be interested in sponsoring my monthly cybersecurity meetup?" And they typically would want to because they wanted that, IT audience to listen to their. And so I got them to pay for the food, I got them to pay for the drink, and I gave them a sales pitch. So it was those relationships that I was able to develop in my role that they reached out to me, and then I leveraged it. I turned it around on them. I said, "No, I'm not buying from you, but I'll give you an opportunity to sell to others." And that helped get, top of the line speakers. I mean, I was so proud to be in tiny Monroe or tiny Lake Charles and have national speakers and national companies come to Louisiana just to speak at one of my events because they had the sales budget to do so. And I could give them a target-rich environment to do their demo and their pitch. And so it just worked out from there. So that's some advice I'd give any of your listeners.
That's brilliant. And I love again how you continue to be a servant leader, how you continue to apply yourself, not only in your job, but also look at where the need is and fill that need with very impactful solutions. But I'm really also curious what you're doing, J10, with Louisiana chapter InfraGuard. I'm familiar with that, but I'm sure that a lot of people are not. And what InfraGuard stands for, and what are you doing there, and how crucial that is, not only for state of Louisiana, but also other states and a national level.
Yeah, InfraGuard is such a cool organization. It is a national nonprofit organization. It's a public-private partnership with the FBI to protect our critical infrastructure. The Department of Homeland Security has designated 16 sectors to be considered critical infrastructure. Think of your oil and gas and energy sector. Think of your water treatment facilities. Think of your energy, your power grid. Think of your agriculture sector. And then there's two sectors that are very near and dear to my heart that a lot of people jumble together, but they're really two separate sectors. One is the IT sector, and the other is the communication sector. And so my role with InfraGuard, I've got two roles. I've actually got two leadership roles there. Yeah, Lester Mie is our InfraGuard president, and he does a great job. The Louisiana chapter of InfraGuard is actually one of the best ran and more impactful InfraGuard chapters in all of America. Lester, our president, has won a national InfraGuard award. But what Lester recruited me for initially was to come in and be his communication sector chief. So there's 16 sectors, and in Louisiana, and I guess all InfraGuard nationally, each chapter wants to have one member who is kind of a subject matter expert for that sector. And so Lester brought me in because I used to be the manager of Lumen's trust and safety team, which is basically that law enforcement support for Lumen whenever subpoenas or search warrants would come in from law enforcement across the nation to Lumen. I managed that team. And also the abuse whenever Lumen's employees, or excuse me, customers were doing bad things on the internet. I had the cool job. I got to go fire these customers who were doing bad things. And so because of my role with Lumen, which is in the communication sector, I was a very strong and natural fit to take over the communication sector chief role for InfraGuard. Plus, in my job with Lumen, I already had a strong relationship with the FBI because being a national, not just a state level ISP, but Lumen was a national level and international tier one ISP. The FBI actually had a lot of heavy interest in our success, or if we were being attacked. So I already had a strong rapport with the FBI from my Lumen days. And so Lester recruited me for that. But then he saw I did well in that. And he said, "Hey, J-Tan, will you be the VP of our entire Acadiana region? And so what that means is from Alexandria to Lake Charles to Lafayette, I'm in charge of having 3 meetings a year to try to get that content out to those operators and those security personnel that work in the critical infrastructure sectors. One of the best ways we get that information to them is through our meetings. So I plan, I host, I coordinate 3 meetings a year, one in Lake Charles, one in Lafayette, and the new one that I'm most proud of, I just started this year, is I had the very first ever meeting, InfraGuard meeting, at Fort Johnson, which is for an Army base in central Louisiana, formerly known as Fort Polk. They've recently changed the name to Fort Johnson. So I brought this meeting to those guys because those people, their infrastructure is just as critical to our state, but we didn't have anything for them. So I brought it to them and we had an amazing turnout. So really at a high level, my roles with InfraGuard is to attract and retain more members, recruit members through the meetings, make sure I'm disseminating good information for all sectors. And my role with the communication sector is to be that subject matter expert to make sure that we keep our ears to the ground as sensors to feed that information back to the FBI as informants, because the FBI wants to be left a boom. The FBI wants to stop the bad thing from happening, but they can't do it without good private citizens and private sector partners that have their ear to the ground, to the pulse of what's going on, and then feed that information back. So I love our InfraGuard chapter. I love being a part of it. I've made amazing connections, through this role. I've been in the role about 2 years now, and I don't want to stop.
I love it. Thank you so much again for explaining that, but I'm just amazed how many things you've been involved. And again, for everybody watching and listening, I love example how you are all coming together, public and private sector, as well as local communities and also different organizations, obviously, coming together to collaborate. And when we see so much fragmentation, so many conflicts and issues, collaboration is key. And seems like we've been touching on, it's been as a result, very, very effective. And I just want to point out again, kudos. And for everybody watching and listening, take a look, because it's definitely worthwhile exploring, because we all could do better in our own communities, including here where I'm at in Colorado. But with all of this that you've been doing, I'm just curious, you also are giving back to your community of military guys who are transitioning from military world and arena into civilian, and also being in volunteering and supporting so many additional initiatives, which I'm also shocked. It's like, where do you have a time to do all of that? Do you sleep?
I get that question a lot, and my answer is I half-ass everything and I delegate where else I can.
Which also shows where the opportunities and needs are. But with everything you did so far, what is coming in the next chapter in your life?
Well, next chapter in my life, some of the things that are on my, so I was telling you earlier, I've got about 19 things that I'm doing, and I need to be more mindful of my time. I'm spread too thin. So I want to, take some of that and whittle it away and really focus on the things that are impactful, where my time is most valuable. And so I need to chop that time down, because I do have a couple things that I mentioned. One is I want to, my goal is to leave Lake Charles and state of Louisiana better than I found it. So some of the ways I can do that is find ways to be most impactful. And one of the ways I might be able to be most impactful is actually run for city council. Sometimes you can affect, policies and change in direction better from the inside than you can as just an outside. And I know a lot of times our technology outpaces our regulation, our cyber criminals, and the crimes they're committing outpaces the laws and regulation because the technology is moving so fast. So we need a lot of legislation and laws to help us curtail, the cyber crimes, the cyber fraud out there. And so one ways I can do that is, maybe run for city council. But I can't do that if I have all these other things I'm doing. And another thing that I like to do with my time moving forward is I'm really passionate about all kinds of nonprofit organizations. Homelessness is a big issue across the nation. And it breaks my heart as a military veteran to see homeless veterans. So I want to kind of start a nonprofit org where it's a nonprofit that helps nonprofits, because you don't need to reinvent the wheel. There's so many great nonprofits out there, but they don't have a marketing budget or they don't have the reach they need. And so maybe I can use my communities that I've already built across the state to help highlight a lot of this good work that other nonprofits are already doing. And then maybe I could take this nonprofit, if I get it going, and I can help build a cybersecurity hub in Lake Charles where we help train that next generation, and we get law enforcement and we get military and we get private sector and we get them all together with academia, McNeese University, Sewella, the community college here in town. And we all partner together to help harden our city as a target, our state as a target, but also workforce development. Because, the jobs of today are going to be different 20 years from now. The jobs of today are different than what it was 20 years ago. And AI is going to really change the landscape over the next 20 years, I think. Because businesses, as free enterprising economy we have, they have a right to automate. They have a right to reduce headcount. That's a free country. They have that right to do that. But if you don't do it methodically and within certain guidelines, I'm afraid we could have so many unemployment all at once, and that would lead to more homelessness, more crime. So I think just getting involved in city, local politics, national politics are a big deal, of course, but where can you actually impact your community the best? Is it at the national level or is it in your community? And I say it's in your community. So I want to be more of a community activist with my knowledge of military, my knowledge of technology, and help bring that knowledge and expertise to our city government and help highlight what nonprofits are doing. So my mind goes a million ways. My next chapter is unwritten yet, but I know it's going to be impactful and it's going to be with a good heart and a servant heart.
Love it. So it's great to see how you're already taking ahead and continue to serve your state with so much passion, but also anticipating the needs and finding creative solutions like you've been doing all along. So when we look at all of this, what you accomplished, I'm curious, what would you like to, your legacy to be? You obviously led it, your legacy already, you lived it. Lived it. So what would you like to, in this new chapter of your life, with all accumulated knowledge and experiences, really say, I'm proud because I achieved this. And as a result, I love what I stand for and what my legacy is.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And one of the things that I think about a lot is, what defines success? Personally, I don't think I'm successful. I got a great income, I got my health, but I don't think I'm successful. And so I question, I'm a father, I have a 22-year-old daughter. And when she was in middle school, I asked her, I said, Kylie, do you think I'm successful? And she said, yeah. She said, do you think you're successful? I said, no, father, no, daughter, I don't. I won't be successful until I raise you to be an independent thinking, independent living, tax paying, voting, contributing member of society. Well, guess what, Isabella? My daughter, she's got her college degree. She works in the medical healthcare industry. She's married. She's a tax paying, voting, contributing member of society. So, by that standard, I'm successful, but I don't feel it. I need a new purpose. I need more. So now I'm starting to think, okay, what do I want my legacy to be? And I guess I kind of touched on it earlier is I want people, when I'm gone, I want people to say, well, J-Tan, he left Lake Charles and Louisiana better than when he found it. And in order to do that, it's not good enough to stand up these communities. I've got to stand these communities up, and then I've got to let them be self-sustaining. And I need them to have the ability to work independently of me and make everyone around them better. A sign of a good leader on the football field is someone who makes everyone else around you better also. So how do I give back to the next generation of leaders? I think is how I will want my legacy to be. It's not that I did something and I got it for me, but I did something and I gave back and I lifted other people up. So that's what I try to do. I'm not perfect at it. I'm flawed. I don't manage my time properly with all the different 19 things. But I have my heart's in the right mind. And if I do a little bit of mindful, soul searching and really focus on things that I can do the most impact on, I think I can make Louisiana a fun place for people to want to come live and work. And I can make it a hardened target from these hackers. Because I tell people all the time, hackers going to hack. You got to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And so that's the message that I try to get out there. And one cool thing about the different communities that I built and some of the roles that I have, as I go to these different professional networking events and I talk about InfraGuard at the Cyber Club meeting, I talk about the Louisiana State Guard Cyber Reserve at the InfraGuard meeting. At each meeting that I go to, I'm talking about the other communities.
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.